Hello, and welcome to another episode of the British English Podcast. I am your host, Charlie Baxter. And today we have a delightful conversation with a teacher called Tristan that I look forward to sharing with you. But before we jump into the conversation, imagine this. We start in the cobbled streets of London. Fly over the Atlantic, touch down amid the lush greenery of Costa Rica. Then zip across the globe to the quaint, winding streets of France. Quite a journey, isn't it? Well, our guest Tristan for this episode has lived this exact adventure and many more, I'm sure. He started in the UK and then navigated his way through Costa Rica and has recently moved to live on a farm in France. We'll be exploring his journey, seeing how his British identity has influenced his experiences, and we'll be revealing the exciting, the challenging, and potentially rather amusing moments along the way. From fish and chips and a cup of tea to gallo pinto, and then, I guess, a long piece of bread called a baguette. It's going to be a cultural blend you won't want to miss. So stick around as we're about to embark on an interesting cultural journey together, learning how today's guest has navigated it all. So please put your hands together. You don't need to literally clap, especially if you're on a bus or anything like that. That would look a bit weird. Metaphorically, put your hands together and raise the roof for today's podcast guest, Tristan. All right, let's get into the conversation. All right. Thank you, Tristan, for taking the time to speak with me about your recent move and your life, really. How are you doing today?
Bonjour, Charlie. Thank you for having me. I am calling you from the French countryside of Brittany on the west coast of France. And thank you. Yeah, thank you for having me. This is my first ever podcast, so it's a new experience for me.
Oh, I'm very honored to be your first. You're in Brittany, right? Lovely. Did you say to me, we will get into the France side of your life in a little bit more detail later on, but very quickly, did I get it wrong that you're taking over a farm?
Before you begin, I'd like to let you know that we now have an official app released for the British English Podcast. You can now listen to this podcast on the new app and get all of the learning resources along with it. And for those of you who are just listening on your favourite podcast app, then I've got a present for you. Download the app, sign up to the course called Free Podcast Worksheets, and you will find every single episode available for you to listen to along with the free worksheet for that episode. A huge resource right there waiting for you to enjoy. So go download it right now at your app store, either by typing in BEP, BEP, or the British English Podcast. Links are also in the show notes. Enjoy this episode.
Is that completely wrong?
Not necessarily taking over. Basically, I've moved to a farm, which is my girlfriend's family farm. And it's not an active farm in the sense that there's no animals, but she has a lot of land which she rents to other farmers. We are pretty much surrounded by a lot of fields. As far as I can see, really, it's just like cornfields, which is beautiful, of course.
That's very nice. I've got a photo in my mind right now of me. We're not going to talk about me too much, but I did a cycle trip down the west coast of France when I was 22. And we had a tent in our panniers, and we would camp every night illegally in different farm fields. And I've got an exact image of that kind of farm setting outside of the tent when you wake up in the morning. It's a glorious, glorious view, very peaceful. And it just screams, take me to the bakery and get me a baguette. Did you stop?
Yeah, or a pain au chocolat.
Yeah. Yeah, we used to eat a lot of them.
I haven't actually had the chance. Yeah, of course.
Really?
Not yet. I haven't had the chance to go to the patisserie this morning, although, of course, I've had a nice cup of French coffee. Not quite the same as Costa Rica, though, but we'll get into that, I'm sure. But yeah, actually, when you were mentioning about camping, we have a field that actually we rent out to people that pass through. And we have a lot of interesting people that kind of, well, last night, for example, a German guy who's doing a tour of Europe, massive tour by himself on his motorbike, just came and stayed for one night in his tent kind of, even though you're quite rural here, you meet a lot of, you know, travelers that pass through.
Oh, that is nice. So, and you get to talk to them?
Yeah. I mean, if you want to, obviously you can just say, all right, well, there's the field. Yeah. Do what you need to do. Or obviously you could start talking to them for sure.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. That's where you are at the moment. And we'll circle back to that towards the end of the conversation.
Yeah.
But let's go with telling the audience a little bit about yourself and what made you decide to pack your bags to Costa Rica to begin with.
I was born and raised in Northwest London, in an area close to Wembley Stadium, which is our national stadium. And I was working in a pretty standard 9-to-5 job in a boring, pretty office setting. And that was 5 years ago. And I realized, okay, do I want to do this for the rest of my life? Or should I try and find something else?
What was the job?
It's interesting, actually. I mean, I said it was mundane or boring, but I was a probation officer.
Oh, right. Wow.
Yeah. Shall I explain what that is?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Definitely.
Maybe some people have seen it in films, like American films, they call it like a parole officer, I think. We call it probation. So it's government service. You assist ex-convicts or criminals, I should say, not convicts, but criminals who are released from prison or receive some type of, let's say, punishment or sentence for a crime. That's the traditional job, but I was working in a magistrate's court. So in England, we have two types of courts. We have magistrates and we have the Crown Court. And magistrates usually deal with lesser crimes. Crown courts usually deal with very, very serious ones. I was in this magistrate's court for about 2 or 3 years, interviewing people before they would go into court. And I would have to deliver a report to the judge. So I would have to stand up in court and basically say, well, this person has a lot of problems, or maybe doesn't have any problems, and, you know, you can give him a break, you know, just give him a fine. But obviously there are guidelines you have to follow. And that was difficult for me because I'm not a great public speaker. It was really hard for me to get used to speaking in front of the public. And, you know, some things that I could say would influence whether or not someone went to prison.
That does not help the nerves, does it?
No, exactly. And I never really suggested prison for anyone because I didn't want to kind of have that come back on me. Someone come and find me after they've been released from prison.
Oh, yeah. So your identity isn't hidden, is it?
No, it's not. No, your name's on the report. It's a big responsibility, but, you know, day-to-day tasks were pretty boring after a while. And I was in the office one morning and I decided, all right, I need to travel. You know, I'm 25. I was 25 years old.
Sorry to interrupt, but 25, that's still quite young to be given that responsibility. Was it the normal age for people in your position?
I was one of the, definitely I was the youngest at the time. I started in an administration position and then I was kind of promoted. Yeah, I think it was relatively, not unheard of, but I didn't pave the way for the younger generation of probation officers. But I realized that they started accepting more younger people. So I don't know, maybe I did. Now there's a whole new generation of probation officers, thanks to me.
Well, that's something that you can be confident in knowing all the way through your life, perhaps.
Yeah.
What was the route to that? You said administration. So you were, you just decided to take that role out of the blue before? Like you went from...
Yeah. I kind of just found I came out of university and I found whatever job that I could really get at that time. Like a lot of people. And this was in the probation service. And then eventually after a year or two working in the administration, I managed to go up to a certain level of probation officer. And yeah, from that, like, obviously they train you a little bit more, of course. I have a background in psychology. My degree is in psychology. So that was quite useful. You know, when interviewing people, you're in a room with someone. Some of these people are quite dangerous. They have a lot of serious problems. They can be, you know, mood changes in a few seconds, depending on what questions you ask. So you have to be very sensitive, careful with what you say to these people. And yeah, I enjoyed parts of it, but after a while, I think I was more tired of the rat race of London, the kind of commuting on the tube every day, people kind of a bit miserable in the morning, no one looking at each other, just on their mobiles. And I was looking for something different.
Yeah, nice.
I decided basically, okay, what can I do that allows me to travel? And I started researching TEFL schools around the world. So a TEFL school obviously is a school which teaches people to teach English as a foreign language. And I don't know about you, but Central America was one of those places we didn't hear much about growing up in England.
That's true. I heard about, obviously, North America and South America, but yeah, Central America was sort of glazed over. They didn't really focus on it. That's true. Yeah.
Like, I mean, you hear about Mexico, of course. People traveled to, you know, Tulum and Playa Carmen, I think it's called.
I heard somebody but no one really, say that Mexico might be North America. Is Mexico North America?
I think it's considered central, as far as I'm aware. Maybe I'm wrong. But no, because as you know, like the typical backpacker, the typical British backpacker usually goes to Southeast Asia, or maybe like what you did and went to Australia, New Zealand, Fiji, that kind of area of the world, South America, of course, but not so much Central. So I had done a lot of Southeast Asia and a bit of South America. I decided, all right, let's go somewhere which is a bit different. And I found two TEFL schools, one in Guatemala and one in Costa Rica. And I finally decided on Costa Rica because I love the beach. And this place was literally in a little village on the Pacific coast. And it was beautiful. And I stayed there for 4 years.
Really cool.
Yeah.
So there were images of this beach that you could see in England when you had to decide between Honduras and Costa Rica. Oh, sorry.
Guatemala and Costa Rica. Yeah. Honduras is a little bit more risky. I don't think there's any TEFL schools in Honduras.
That's Central America, isn't it? Or am I off again? Yeah.
It is. It is correct. Yeah. So at the top, you have Mexico. Then you go down, it's Guatemala. Then you have like Belize and Honduras, El Salvador. And then you have Costa Rica and Panama.
Okay. Yeah. Makes sense.
And so basically, yes, your question?
I was wondering if you had the images in front of you to be able to choose between the two, Guatemala and Costa Rica.
Yeah, I think they, on those websites, they have a lot of kind of images which try and incentivize you to join the school. I was based in Willesden, which I don't know if you know much about Willesden, but it's a pretty rundown area of London. So I was in this office in Willesden. It was a rainy day and I was looking outside the window and I was thinking, wow, okay, this beach in Costa Rica looks a little bit better than where I am right now. I packed my bags.
How quickly did that happen? Because did you have to go through like a certificate to get a TEFL qualification before, or you did it when you were there?
There's many options to get a TEFL certificate. You could either do an online course, which a lot of people do, or you could physically go to a school. It doesn't have to be in a foreign country. It could be in England if I wanted to stay in England. But I preferred to do it in a physical place because you have that experience of face-to-face teaching in a classroom. And so it wasn't immediately. I kind of planned it for a couple of months and gave myself some time to really think about it. And, you know, because it's an investment. It's not a cheap course to do.
No.
And I didn't know if I could see myself being a teacher, because if I thought back to when I was in English class at high school, I imagine myself being an English teacher. You know, it's a joke, really. Some of my friends still laugh at me when I say I'm an English teacher. Yeah.
The street cred as an English teacher, especially like an English as a foreign language teacher in the UK with British people, isn't great, is it? We don't really score highly.
I haven't heard any like negative things about it. But yes, I mean, I guess it's viewed more of a supplement job.
Yeah.
Like, you know, people do it in addition to another job, or perhaps just to keep funding their travel.
Yes.
Or just to have a voluntary experience abroad.
Pardon the interruption, but I want to let you know about an activity I have created for you to access for free on the BritishEnglishPodcast.com/freebies. It is a creativity exercise that helps you find ways to learn English whilst being in a state of flow. Being in a state of flow happens when we're totally immersed in an activity to the point where we pay no attention to distractions and time itself seems to pass by without any notice. I would say I am in my happy place when I'm in a state of flow because it allows my creativity to flourish. And I want to help you connect your learning experience with feeling this immense level of happiness that is entirely possible when studying. Who'd have thought it? Revising English can open up feelings of pure ecstasy. Don't worry though, I'm not forcing drugs on you, but I am encouraging you to check out this new exercise I have created that will help you reach a state of flow, I mean flow, when learning English. Find the link in the show notes to thebritishenglishpodcast.com/freebies, that is spelt F-R-E-E-B-I-E-S, and then click on the creativity exercise and we can all get high on life together. Back to the episode. That's true, yeah. Voluntary year out, like a sabbatical, or people tend to think you do it after university to get some travel experience, which, I mean, both of us kind of used it for that reason, to leave the UK and have a bit of sun and some travel and some life experience. Because I met a lot of people in that moment of moving to another country. And I don't think any of them are still doing it, probably about 30 of them. I don't think any of them are. So if I was to meet up with them and say I'm still doing it, they would be like, oh, wow, okay. But it's the way it goes sometimes, isn't it? Did you see yourself continuing this far on with teaching English even back then? Do you think you saw that?
No, definitely not. I didn't realize the opportunity that teaching online would give me. When I imagined doing the TEFL school, I only imagined working in a physical school, like teaching 30 people in a small classroom in somewhere in Central America. And that's what I did for the first couple of months. I found a local project, which was run by a local church. It was a volunteer program and it was hard. I was hard. You know, I was in this sweaty classroom with no air conditioning. The students were really nice because, you know, we're going to get into Costa Rican culture and, you know, they are lovely people and very friendly, but slightly differently behaved than, I don't know, than English students.
Yeah.
I don't know, because I haven't had experience teaching in an English school. Difficult for me to compare, but a lot of it was classroom management, getting people to shut up basically and stop talking. And that's what I didn't like about.
Right. That was tricky in Costa Rica. So you're thinking that as a student, when you were in the UK, your classroom were more inclined to be quiet quicker?
I think at the age group that I was teaching.
Which was?
By that age, which was about 17 to 21.
Oof, gosh, that's tricky.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, a lot of them came from very poor backgrounds.
Right.
Costa Rica has quite a young pregnancy age.
Right.
Like the average age, I think, is, I don't know, it's very, very young. It's somewhere like 18 or 19.
Right.
So a lot of the students I was teaching were pregnant or either had a lot of kids already. I was expecting them to be maybe a bit more motivated to kind of learn English for their own kind of development and future. But I don't know, it was program. I don't think they were forced to do it. Oh, no, they were. They were. Sorry. They received benefits if they did the program. So that might be why, you know, some of them didn't really want to be there. That makes sense.
Right. Is there a phrase called pura vida or pura vida?
Pura vida. Yeah. Pura vida, which basically translates as pure life.
Okay.
And it's a philosophy. It's a way of living. It's essentially meaning take things easy and enjoy life and take it slow, you know, relax, chill out, which If you go to Costa Rica, you will see that printed everywhere.
Really?
On t-shirts, usually with a picture of a sloth. Because Costa Rica really? Is famous for this animal.
I see.
Go yeah, because what I knew about Costa Rica before was really from David Attenborough documentaries, watching sloths. And really kind of the sloth ties in with the kind of culture and the mentality of slow, you know, take things easy. Pura vida.
I know it's not obviously too near, but I went to Belize and I remember mm-hmm. on some of the islands, their phrase, I mean, it wasn't as poetic or Spanish, but it was just go slow. That was their motto.
Okay.
Go slow. Kind okay. of. Just that was it. And if you're cycling too yep. fast, they'd be like, go slow, man. Go slow. Are you a traffic warden? No. Just philosophy in life. Go slow. Yeah. How did you find that, given that I would argue that our motto is quite different in the UK? What would you say is our motto if you had to? Yeah. Complain, but be quick about it.
Go fast.
Yeah.
No. It is very different in terms of, let's say, London, because I grew up in London. I really don't know what it's like outside of London. It's difficult for me to say, but people rush. People are rushing to the next place, work, home, pub, maybe. And they're always rushing. And that was hard for me to get, you know, to change and to get used to the slowness of Costa Rica. Now, I think one of the reasons it is slower is because of the temperature. You know, it's 35 degrees every day. You can't run. You can't rush. Otherwise, you need to take a shower every 5 minutes. You're just sweating.
Yeah. But that must have been hard because time is almost like a currency. You've come from a place that time equals money almost.
Exactly. That is true.
Do you know what your level of English is? If not, then how can you tell if you're even improving? Considering you are no longer a beginner in this journey, you should be doing everything you can to show to yourself that your hard work is paying off. To do that, you need to know where you're at right now to be able to recognize the progress in the future. So, I have a quick and easy English level test for you to take right now for free to instantly find out what level of English you actually have. Head to thebritishenglishpodcast.com/testme or find the link in the show notes of this episode. And now,
that's
yeah,
true.
You've got to be mindful of not sweating too much too quickly.
Yeah, I think the temperature and the climate has a big factor in the lifestyle. So basically, people would wake up at 5 a.m. and that's pretty a normal time for people to wake up, 5 or 6, and they get stuff done in the morning. That's when they're like productive because of the temperature.
I see. Okay.
And nothing gets done between like 11 and 5 during the day. Like
wow.
Shops are still open, you know, everything's still open. But if you go out, you'll just see less people. People will just be sitting under a tree, chilling, you know, waiting in the shade, waiting for the sun to kind of cool off. And then things get done in the evening. I would often hear like construction workers start banging at like 8 or 9 p.m. And I'm like, whoa, that's illegal. That's illegal to do that in the UK.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, that's a huge culture shock.
Yeah, it was.
And what time would they finish?
No, they wouldn't do it like crazy late because a lot of people would kind of... It would be quiet at about 10, 10:30. My neighborhood, quite a lively neighborhood, a lot of wild animals, dogs that kind of just ran around and horses that kind of had no owners.
What? Horses yeah. that had no owners. I've seen the dogs, like street dogs, but not, are they street horses?
They're kind of like street horses. I mean, they were beach horses. They would run in packs across the beach
oh,
and it was beautiful. Like
me.
Just imagine a group of horses just running free across the beach.
That is great.
Yeah, it is wonderful. Obviously, they probably had an owner, but it was a small town. So they were kind of like, all right, you go and do whatever you want and go and graze in a different place. And then I'll come and find you later.
Yeah. I mentioned the pura vida lifestyle because you were talking...
Pura vida,
yeah. Okay, yeah. Because they, because you were saying in the class, you felt like they should have a little bit more motivation to develop their own English skills. But would you say that maybe their focus is that their priorities lie within family and enjoyment over work?
Definitely. The society is quite collectivist. Is that the right word? Collectivist?
Yeah.
More
yeah.
of a collectivist society than an individualistic society. I would say that's mm-hmm. a big difference between the UK and Costa Rica. There is a large importance on family and sharing. And so, yes, like a lot of the expectation maybe for younger people is different in Costa Rica. I don't know, maybe the ambition is a bit different. It's not so materialistic. It's more about kind of like the simple life basics, you know, having a family, providing for your family, but not, you know, not trying to earn mega bucks.
Yeah.
But it depends on the individual, of course.
Yes, always. But it's a hard one to get your head around coming from where we come from, because it's not like America, quite like chasing the dollar all the time, in my opinion, for some people. But we're definitely encouraged to push hard with our career primarily, and then that will support a family in the future. But it's completely the reverse in priorities.
I think they do obviously have ambition to provide, like anyone would. But like you said, like in the UK and from my group of friends, I could see that a lot of people were chasing a beautiful house or a beautiful car mm-hmm. or a lot of materialistic things that they believed would make them happy. But in reality, all they needed was a nice job, good family, and the basics in life, you know, food, shelter. And that's what I think a lot of people in Costa Rica achieve very well. And that's why it's one of the happiest places to live in the world. And it's been voted, like, it's always maybe not top now anymore, but maybe second or third on the list of happiest places to live.
Right.
And I don't know if you've ever heard of blue zones.
No.
A blue zone, there's about 6 or 7 blue zones in the world.
Right.
And basically a blue zone is where people live longer and they have a higher age expectancy.
Oh.
I believe that one of the other areas is California, Sardinia in Italy. There's a place in Japan, one island in Greece, I think, and one area of Costa Rica, which is actually the area I was living in.
Uh-huh.
And you can only get, let's say, this status of being a blue zone if you match certain requirements, being that they have a high level or a good level of diet, you know, nutrition, low levels of stress, good sense of community. These types of factors all tie in to actually living longer. It's proven, you know, scientifically proven. And that was really interesting to see that.
Yeah.
In effect.
Blue zone. I've never heard of that. Yeah. So it's not just getting a blue pill if you live in there. Mm-mm. And it gives you a longer life.
Not quite.
Those are nice attributes towards getting blue zone. Getting blue zoned, maybe.
Blue zoned, yeah.
I was thinking of a tale that I was told when I was 22 and I came out of university. Apologies if you've heard it and I'll butcher it, but hopefully the moral of the story will still be in place. An American goes down to, or a resident of the United States goes down to, let's say, Central America.
A gringo.
Yes, exactly. A gringo goes on holiday and he goes to a fishing market and then he asks a guy to take him out on his fishing boat. And he goes out and he spends all day and he catches one fish, but he's in the sunshine having a beautiful time. And then the American says, why don't you scale this up? Why don't you create your own fishing company? And the guy's just relaxed sitting there and saying, why? And he says, well, you know, if you scale it up, then you could have your own team of fishermen. And then before you know it, you could be sitting and doing what you want. What would you want to do? And he said, I want to go and fish every day and just come back and have my fish with my family. That would be my ideal. And that's what I've got. And he's like, oh yeah, all right. Well done. It's an interesting confusion that we've almost got.
Yeah, it perfectly summarizes what I guess I was just saying. It's not like there's a lack of ambition. It's just like finding that balance in your life of happiness. Why push yourself if you've already got everything you need, the basics in life. And that was one of my motivations for leaving London because, like I said, you know, I felt like I was chasing a career, chasing to find a mortgage, you know, all of these things, which is great, of course. You know, I'm not saying that you shouldn't, but I felt like before the age of 30, I didn't really need those things. And just trying to find a bit of a simple balance in life was more important.
And do you think you found it?
Yes, I definitely experienced the pura vida. And like we were saying, you know, I at the beginning was walking very, very fast down the street or cycling down the street very quickly. And I would get a lot of people looking at me like, why are you rushing?
That's such a life lesson.
And I felt really like, yeah, it is.
Take it slow.
And I remember one of my friends from England came to visit me and he was walking fast. And I was like, bro, pura vida, take it slow.
Did he get what you meant?
Yeah. And he was like, you know what? You're right. You're really right. And I think that people might learn when they come to Costa Rica. Obviously, people come for the nature. It's stunning. It's lush. You know, it's just green. And I don't know if I'm absolutely correct in this fact, but I think they contribute 6% of the world's biodiversity, which...
What percentage did you say?
6% of the world's
only in a small geographic area. That's impressive.
It's a very small area and it only has a population of 5 million.
Right. Yeah, I have heard that their biodiversity is insane. So that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Another interesting fact is they abolished the army in 1949.
Huh. So they've got no army.
No army. Which is really bizarre, especially like that happened soon after World War II. So I guess everyone was on high alert. And they have reinvested a lot of the military budget into education and healthcare.
Right.
And you can really see that in the country. Everyone, I'm sure we'll get onto this in the next section, but they speak very good English because the education system is pretty good in comparison, let's say, to other countries in Central America.
Actually, thinking about it, my first Spanish teacher online was a Costa Rican and she had very good English. Okay. When I went to Chile, I had quite a big bubble of English speaking teachers that I socialized with. I lived with a Chilean, so I was able to get that kind of local experience in my apartment and he would invite me to barbecues and things like that. Did you get much experience with locals yourself?
Yes. At the beginning, I would say I tried to integrate as much as I could and immerse myself in the language. But I feel a little bit guilty, actually, that after 4 years of living there, that my Spanish is not a higher level. I would say that it's probably B1 still. I slightly blame the fact that I'm an English teacher because I spent most of my time speaking English online. Therefore, for my job, I didn't really need to interact with local people too much. Also, the town where I lived was very full of expatriates.
Ah.
A lot of gringos, Americans, and a lot of Europeans, but not so many British. I was thinking I was one of two British people living in that town. And the other person was actually 20 minutes down the road from where I lived. It was very bizarre. Like we knew exactly the area where we've been to the same pub. It was very strange.
Oh, that is weird.
Yeah. So to answer your question, it was, I tried to integrate at the beginning when I was involved in a lot of volunteer projects. But when I started teaching online and living on the beach, people spoke English very well. Tourism is a big factor in that town. So of course, a lot of local people speak very well. I can, in terms of like going to a restaurant and doing all those things where you need to, you know, communicate in the local language, I could do that very easily. But when you actually sit down and have a conversation with someone, I think I would still sometimes struggle, which is a shame. And it's a lesson that I've learned. And I hope that I don't repeat that now that I'm in France.
It's something that I think you might have to be endlessly strict on yourself with. If it's possible, we always
as humans, I think we tend to take the shortcut, take the easy route. And if the easy route is there, then it's hard to not take it. I wish you luck with that challenge that you put yourself in.
One of the interesting things is that I think I actually learned more French in Costa Rica than Spanish.
Because the motivation to move to France was high?
Actually, so about 2 years into my experience there, I met my girlfriend who's from France, which is why I live now in France. And there was a large French expat community in that town, like really, really dominating. They owned most of the businesses, actually. I called them the French Mafia when I was there. They didn't like that too much.
Hopefully that... Yeah, I can imagine. Let's hope they
were. Like an English guy calling them French Mafia. They're not going to take very well to me. But eventually they called me roast beef at the beginning. Which is, I don't know if you've heard that before. Like that's the slur that French people call English people, roast beef.
Can you remind me why?
I think it's to do with like the history of obviously British people loving roast beef.
Okay.
It comes from a very, I don't know, I think it's quite an old story. I'm not going to pretend like I know, but we obviously call the French what we used to. I don't think anyone does it anymore, but they call them frogs or frog's legs.
Yeah.
It's just a stereotype based on the food that we eat. Did you find it?
Yeah. I'm just searching it. I think it's basically what you said. During this period in the 18th century, during the real beef we had between each other. Roast beef was a popular and staple dish in England. The French started calling the English roast beef as a kind of jest,
roast beef.
Yeah. Associating them with their traditional food. This term is somewhat similar to how the French are sometimes referred to as frogs due to the stereotypical association with eating frog's leg. Yeah, mm-hmm. Pretty much exactly what you
or snails. I guess, you know, we don't say snails, but I would associate snails more with France than frogs.
Yeah. I've had snails and the only time I had them was in France. Yeah. Have you had snails? Have you had frog's legs?
No, I haven't had either. I'm looking forward to that experience.
Okay.
If I ever get the chance.
Yeah.
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 Let's go back a little bit.
Yeah, we're getting sidetracked.
I think we covered all of this very naturally, but was there anything else that you felt like as a habit, as a British person, you had to ditch or tweak being in Costa Rica other than what we've talked about?
Not so much, I don't think. Maybe, yeah, just in terms of like, it's not really a habit, but to get used to the fact that the seasons, the daylight savings, there wasn't any daylight savings. So basically, Costa Rica is just above the equator in the center of, can you say in the center of the hemisphere? That makes sense.
Southern hemisphere. It's just above the equator in the northern hemisphere, maybe.
Exactly. Right. So the time of sunset and the time of sunrise does not really change throughout the year.
That's strange for us.
Exactly. Because now that I'm living in France, like for the last 3 weeks, I'm finishing work at like 10 p.m. and it's still light. And I'm like, what? What is going on? It's like very disorientating for me. That was hard to adjust to. And it feels like the days are much shorter. So you do have to wake up early. And staying hydrated, I guess. You know, you just sweat so much. Just to drink tons of water each day just to get through the day.
Now that you're in France, obviously it's a bit hotter when you've moved. But are you enjoying not needing to drink as much?
It's actually like the perfect time for me to move because I'm not so... It's not such a culture shock in terms of, well, not culture shock, but climate, weather shock, climate shock, we could say. Yeah. So that was the actual motivation for moving in the summer, the European summer. Also because I brought a cat back from Costa Rica.
We will leave it there for part one of today's episode. Thank you very much for listening up to this point. If you did want to listen to part two and part three of this conversation, then you can head over to thebritishenglishpodcast.com and check out the Premium Podcast or Academy memberships. The Premium Podcast gives you access to the full conversation along with extended glossaries, transcripts, and flashcards, whereas the Academy gives you all of that plus exclusive videos and audios for the season-based episodes, explaining the vocabulary, exampling them, giving you quizzes, writing assignments, and weekly speaking classes on Zoom. But if you were just here for part one of this conversation, then I thank you very much for stopping by. I hope you enjoyed the show. Do grab that free worksheet by clicking the link in the show notes. My name's Charlie, and I will see you next week on the British English Podcast.